My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Bring along the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies to add a sprinkle of joy to your workday. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
For the people that are like getting ready now, come 6 months from now, there's going to be so much opportunity to come in and pick up those on sale assets.
Not everybody was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. Some people actually have to work for it, like me and like my new guest. I'm talking about Dina Jetty. She went from working as a 9-to-5 cubicle person to owning her own business, to jumping into real estate investments, and now has done over $1 billion in multifamily investments.
It might seem overwhelming and it might seem scary, and it is, because it's like taking a single sip out of a fire hose. But it's like that for all of us. We're just comfortable doing it because we do it afraid anyway.
How did she make the shift from working and trading her time for money to now buying and selling over $1 billion in multifamily, and more importantly, helping lots of other people, hundreds, thousands of other people to do the exact same thing?
Should I start with single family or multifamily? Yes. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like,
where did she get the idea? How did she get a partner? How did she get the money? And how did she get to where she's at today? Laying down the exact clues that she's left behind so you can follow them to achieve the same thing if you want. All right, Vina.
Yes.
I'm excited for this.
Me too.
Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I don't get a lot of people coming in studio, so when I do, it's I really enjoy it.
I think doing live podcast recordings are like so much better than doing Zoom.
Yeah.
Everyone like lowered the bar during COVID.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is just, it's so much better energy.
It is. And it's hard to do it over Zoom because of the lag.
Yes.
And so you don't know where you can like interrupt people.
Yeah.
and it's less like organic.
I totally agree.
It's like question, yes, answer kind of a thing. So I like to talk about disrupting markets.
Yeah.
My career has been alternative to say the least. Yeah. And I like to talk to people who are doing things alternative, mm-hmm, as well. So forget the go to school, get a good, yeah, job, save for 50 years.
Yeah.
That was never going to work for me. I think of the big legacy institutions we want to disrupt. So media, which, mm-hmm, I'm trying to do here.
Yeah.
Education,
yeah,
which I'm trying to do as well.
Yeah.
Health, I'm not doing that one. Finance, yeah, definitely. And you're certainly somebody who's done something different.
Yes.
Over $1 billion of transactions,
yes,
in real estate and multifamily, yes, space specifically. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the appetite for multifamily. Mm-hmm. I want to think about what your strategies were for getting to where you're at, where you're going,
yep,
how you think about the big global macroeconomic picture into that. And then where people can get started,
yeah,
if they're attracted into something like this. But let's start before that.
Okay.
So one thing I saw, you know, in your information is you're really focused on building a network,
yes,
of people.
Yes.
I've often said, I learned, I had two companies I sold off, a Fortune 500 exit. I had built, fixed and flipped over 100 properties.
Yeah.
I had sold my business. I was retired. I was done. And then 2008 came, wiped me out, and I had to start all over.
Yeah.
And what I learned at that point was that everyone says it takes money to make money, but I had no money. As a matter of fact, I was now millions of dollars in debt.
Yes.
And it wasn't the money that I needed. It was the relationships that I had generated and cultivated, and it was the mental skills that I had acquired.
100%.
And using the skills that I had and the people that I knew, I was able to get it back pretty quickly. But everyone focuses on the financial side, which is the hardest one and maybe the least effective of the three.
Yeah, I agree with this. So I think that people think that money is the end goal, and it's not. It's just a tool to get what we all really want, which is control of our time, right? We want to have freedom, right? And I think about it now because I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then I'll have someone on my team be like, but blah, 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 it's going to be this much. And I'm like, I just don't want to do it. And they're like, what do you mean?
So you don't want to do something to like get money?
Yeah. I mean, like there are some people I just don't want to spend time with. And so I don't want to do business with them. Yeah. So I won't do it. And it's like really interesting because like once you get to that level, it's very freeing, right? Because now I only do the things I want to do with the people I want to do them. And I just don't waste my time with the rest of it. And I love being able to do that because there was a time not that long ago where I was like, okay, I have to do anything to make sure that like we're getting one step ahead and one step ahead and one step ahead. And so for me, getting to the level where I'm just like, no, for no other reason than I don't want to.
Yeah.
And to me, that feels exciting, right? That feels like, okay, I've made it now, check. Yeah. And I think that the one mistake, if I look back, the biggest mistake I made was underestimating the power of those relationships. Yeah. A lot of people are really surprised to find out, like I've never paid for like a mentorship or any, I've never paid for a VIP ticket at a conference.
Still, even now?
Even now. Well, and now it's because I'm invited to those rooms, right? Like I'm invited to speak at those conferences.
So am I, and I still pay for masterminds and stuff, but.
You do?
Yeah.
I'm already in those masterminds, right? Like Pace Morby, who was a guest on your show, like I'm in his community. And I'm entrenched
I am too. I go speak at masterminds, but there's other masterminds I want to get into. It's how I've built my network. So I get paid to speak at a lot of masterminds.
Yeah.
So I'm in those rooms, but I still invest because there's other rooms I want to get into. I want to build my network. But.
So I will invest in those. Yeah. It's not that I won't. It's the ones that I want to be in.
You're in.
I haven't figured out how to get into them yet.
I think I want to talk about relationships, but just back to buying time.
Yeah.
If I can take my money and buy someone's 10,000 hours, I do that all day, which is why I've been a big reader.
Yes.
Like imagine reading a book in 10, 12 hours and compressing someone's life into that.
Absolutely.
And so being able to get into a room, 40 grand for a year, I make one deal, makes me millions back, right? So I think about 100%. I think about it like that. But anyway, keep going on the relationships.
Yeah. So, well, the reason I had never paid for a mentorship or like a VIP ticket or anything was because I thought what was behind the paywall was just knowledge. I thought it was like, oh, I'm going to learn about NOI and equity multiples. It's like, I was like, oh, Vina, you can just Google that. And I was right. I could, and I did.
Yeah.
But what I realized now, looking back, right, like connecting the dots in hindsight, is that cost me so much more time. Like that was the easy button.
Right.
And I didn't push it because I didn't realize that it was the easy button.
Yeah.
Now looking back, I'm like, oh, money loves speed. This is the way to be speedy toward what I'm trying to do. And so if I could go back, I would do that differently. Like right now I'm part of masterminds that I've been invited into because I share and I do education in them. And so for me, those are really important. That now and then next level for me is identifying those ones that I'm not part of yet and how to get into them. That's the thing. So I really, there's one person I really want to mentor me. And I emailed him and I was like, hey, what would it cost to get one-on-one mentorship? Like money is no object here. And they responded back very nicely saying, we don't do that, which is funny because I've done that like a million times. I'm like, oh, I don't do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to re-email them again because there, everyone has a number for this. I just haven't found the number
yet. But some people are like you, where like, I just don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. I would say that I have joined multiple masterminds where now the person that ran the mastermind is now one of my good friends. I was mentioned earlier, I don't want to drop the name now, but someone who'd gone through my coaching program, multiple people that went through my coaching program, now we're good friends.
Yeah.
And they don't pay me anymore. Now we're just good friends. I would even say we're peers, right?
Sure.
So it can work both ways. But that's where you are today.
Yes.
Success leaves clues.
Yes.
So people look at you and go, well, that's cool for you, Vina. You can get into any room that you want. But what about me?
Yeah.
So let's go back to sort of the beginning. Like you were just getting going into this whole multifamily space and you had to go out and network.
Yeah, I did.
How did you build your network? And I guess at what point did you realize how important that network was to you?
The first time I did a deal and I completely.
But even before that, how did you even know what kind of to do a deal? Did you have somebody that influenced you that was doing it in front of you?
Yeah. So I definitely had someone who I still am friends with, and we actually like co-invest into each other's deals to this day, who showed me the ropes, and he partnered with me on that first deal.
Great.
And I had to raise $1.2 million in capital.
On your first deal?
On my first deal, which is so funny because I'm like, oh, that seems so easy. I miss the good old days of when that was easy.
Seems hard for a first deal though.
It was hard for my first deal. I cried every day for 6 weeks. I thought I put my family into financial ruin. I thought I had messed everything up.
Because you hit your friends and family list.
Oh, yeah. And I went through the friends and family list very quickly and all of them said like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I totally support you. But come to me when you do your second deal or your third deal or your fifth deal.
Right.
And I thought there was no way I was going to close that deal. I thought we had just lost whatever the earnest money was, like maybe like $100,000, $200,000. I thought we just lost it. And at that time, I'd never lost that much money. And
when was this?
This was almost 10 years ago.
Okay.
And ended up closing it, but I networked so poorly back then because I didn't realize how valuable it was going to be. So I would network and I would meet someone. I'd be like, oh, it's great to meet you. And then I just go on about my way. And if organically we cross paths or we ended up at the same conference, then great. But I never proactively reached out to build those relationships in an intentional way.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know I needed to do that. And I also didn't know who I was speaking to. So my message wasn't clear, right? I talk a lot. In the Multify community, we talk a lot about the investor avatar. And it's because I firmly believe that if you speak to everybody, you speak to nobody.
Yeah.
And the way I'm going to talk to you about multifamily investing is going to be very different than I'm going to talk to a physician or an engineer or a small business owner or a stay-at-home parent. Like they all have different needs and different pain points. And if you don't understand who you're speaking to, you can't speak to them appropriately. And
100%.
You know, it's easy for me to say that now because I actually added it up. So over all of our deals, we've raised $374,315,000 from retail investors.
Yeah.
And the principles are the same, whether you're raising $1.2 or $300 million, it doesn't change, but it becomes a muscle that you exercise and you start seeing the patterns of how investors show up and what their pain points are and how you can help them solve that problem.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
So you had a relationship because somebody brought you a deal that you parted on your first one.
Yes, I did.
And I just want to nail that point for everybody, right? Every deal that I can think of in my whole career has come from somebody that I know.
Yeah.
I mean, where else would it come from?
Yeah,
100%. People don't cold call you with spam and say, I got a deal for you, right?
They do, but you shouldn't listen to those deals.
Yeah, if you get hit up by somebody on social media and saying, I'll invest your crypto for you, don't do that.
Right.
So it comes through your network, right?
Yes.
And so that's the one piece I always want to hit on. And whether 100%. You go out to your local networking events, your chamber of commerce, you go to events like you have, I have, like you need to go out, you need to meet
100%.
People. You can do it online. It's better in person.
I agree. Be in the right rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. What about pouring value into those relationships?
Yeah. Okay. So I love this question because this is the thing that probably is the biggest pet peeve to me is, and I'm sure you get this, right? Like you get someone that goes, Mark, I really love what you're doing. How can I add value to you?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I want to stick a rusty fork in my eye when someone says that to me, right? Because I know the intention is good. I know it comes from a place of really trying to build a genuine relationship, but it is mentally exhausting for you to ask me how you can add value to me. Now I have to do the mental work.
Yeah. And I don't even know who you are.
Right,
I don't know what you could do.
Of thinking about who you could possibly be and what your skill set is and what my needs are. And now I have to spend this time to tell you how to help me. It's counterproductive.
Yeah.
Instead, what I've found is the most successful when someone really wants to lead with value. And people like us, we put out endless amounts of content, right? Like you could consume 100 hours of content of just one of us speaking, right?
Right.
So it's spend 15 seconds looking at the last three things I posted, find out where you can find out, I'm very clear about my values, what's important to me, and then figure out where we align and tell me or show up and deliver the value.
Right.
That's going to get my attention.
The key piece, yeah.
Yes. And so don't message me asking me, can I pick your brain? No, you cannot.
Yeah.
Can I take you out for a cup of coffee? No, I will buy my own coffee so that I don't have to spend an hour of my time doing this thing. But it's because there's no relationship and there's no exchange of value. I don't think it's going to be impactful. Instead, I host meetups where you can come and meet me and ask me a million questions. I will stay there till 3 a.m. answering them.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to, I'm a maximizer, right? That's part of my top strengths and my Clifton strengths assessment. And so I want to make sure I'm impacting as many people as possible at once.
Right.
So those are the things I would say are not the way to lead with value.
We'll come back to that because this is a trend that will carry through. And when you buy, I saw, when you're buying your, I think you call it the Cinderella method.
Yeah.
Right? And so even as a real estate investor, we're looking for projects we can bring value to.
Yes.
It's always the same.
100%.
If you want to make money in this world, you provide value.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
If you work at McDonald's, you're providing value to one person at the counter by pushing buttons that would probably rather just deal with an iPad.
Yeah.
So not a lot of value you're putting into the world. If I want to make more money, I solve bigger problems.
Right.
And even all the way at a multifamily deal, I'm still looking for something I can add value to.
Yes. That's actually our strategy is all value add. That's
and so I think this is just a key piece that will bring this trend, this all the way through. But the key, first of all, is relationships.
Yes.
Knowing people.
Yes.
Get out of your zone. Go meet people.
Yes.
Second, add value into those relationships so that you can start to cultivate those.
Yes.
I try to make myself accessible too. I speak at a lot of conferences and I'll stay there all night answering questions.
Same.
But it's get me there.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Someone just the other day messaged my team and asked if they could get a one-on-one call with me. They'll pay whatever I want, And I'm doing this small little intimate mastermind event. I have a ranch in Austin.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, hey, there's a couple tickets left. If you want to come hang out with me there, you can get access to me. But I don't have time for a phone call either.
Yeah. And it's always the people that are like, no, I don't want that. That also want to take your time for free.
Yeah.
And it's I have young kids. I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend time with a stranger who has not led with any kind of value.
Yeah. Now let's keep moving forward. So you got your first deal.
Yeah, I got my first deal.
Someone brought you a deal to partner with them on. You had to go raise money.
Yes.
Tell me, so had you ever done real estate previous to that? How did that deal come up? And yeah. I mean, how did you decide to do that deal? How was it structured and so forth?
So yes, I had done real estate prior to that. So I'm the daughter of immigrants. You know, my parents, like, typical story, they came here with like $26 in their pocket and like a dream for their future children.
How many kids?
Just two of us. Okay. So it's my sister and I, and my sister is actually my partner at Vive.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, I get to work with her, which is amazing because she's also, you know, my best friend. And so my parents, my mom actually started investing in real estate like 35 years ago.
And she stuck with it this and whole time.
She did, but she always invested in single family.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did go to college. I got my degree in finance. I graduated when I was 20 years old and was like, oh, I'm like an adult with a degree now and I'm going to go do something amazing.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, well, why don't you work for the family business? And I was like, I'm an adult with a degree. I don't need to work for the family business. So I went and I worked.
And what was that? Was that like rent? They rent rental properties?
Yeah. They had like single family long-term rentals.
Yeah.
And so I grew up around seeing that model. And then I graduated college and I went and worked in corporate real estate. Yeah. I worked at like some of the largest firms. I was on the management team for, now I think the asset's worth like $1.5 billion. At the time it was like 1.2. And I was working at a W-2, and then I paid taxes as a married couple for the first time with my husband and I, who we were both W-2 earners. And I remember we paid, at that time it was like $200,000 in taxes. And I called my mom and I was like, what just happened, mom? Like,
you know about this?
I know, we paid all these taxes. Like, what is happening? You didn't tell me about this. And she was like, oh yeah, you should quit your job. And I was like, and like, you know, I'm Indian. Like, this is very not usual. Like, usually it's like, do you want to be a doctor or an engineer?
Right.
And those are your choices, right? And so my mom was like, quit your stable W-2 job and start investing in real estate for yourself. She's like, the IRS doesn't reward you for being an employee. It rewards you for being an employee.
She read Robert Kiyosaki's book.
Yeah, she did, actually. I think she might have been like the first person to read it, because that's when she started investing, was back then. And that and The Millionaire Next Door. So those were like her two Bibles that she went by. And so I was like, okay, well, this seems legit. And so I quit, and, you know, I had full buy-in from my husband too. And I quit and I started investing in single family homes because I thought that was the only way. Like, I didn't know I could ever own a multifamily asset. I thought only like Oprah could own.
So what did you start with single family homes? You bought some rentals?
Yeah, I bought some condos. Okay. I still own some of them today, which is, I hate owning them, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
Just because it's not at scale and I'm like being bothered for like a $200 problem and I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, again, not worth my time.
Yeah.
So anyway, I bought single families, condos, and then I discovered what wholesale properties were. And I never wholesaled properties, but I bought from wholesalers.
Yeah.
And so there was a week where I put like 5 houses under contract.
I want to stop you there before we get too far through your career. A couple of things I want to pull out here for everybody listening. I've often said I have kids as well. I love I have two daughters.
Same.
I think everyone should have kids because it makes you less selfish.
is true for sure.
Right? I mean, it should. Most people. And a few of my friends recently just had kids and I gave them the best piece of advice that I got, which is you had your chance. It's all about them.
Yeah.
And the reason why I want to pull this out real quickly is my dad was a contractor, self-employed business owner, whatever, right? And I think that's what I just saw. My dad just went and made money. And I just went and made money.
Yeah.
The thought of getting jobs doesn't cross my mind. I just go make money, right? Yeah. And I think it was because it was modeled. And the reason why I'm asking this is I think a lot of what, you know, our audience that we're hitting are thinking about themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, should I do this?
Yeah.
Should I go make this money? Should I take this risk? Selfishly. But what kind of example are you setting for your kids?
Yeah. I mean, that's really the question you should be asking.
Right.
I ask that to myself every single day. I wonder if I'm ruining them or not.
Well, but I mean, like, your mom was out there doing it and she modeled that for you. Like, my dad modeled it for me and now you're modeling it for your kids versus like, you can go get that job at that 9-to-5 and you can play it safe.
Yeah.
And you could work as a wage slave for 40 years and see your kids 2 weeks a year on vacation. Or you could go build your own future and then model that for your kids. And I guess that's the kind of point that I think about, where it's like, it's bigger than just me and what I'm trying to do. Like, what role am I setting for my kids in this world? Am I showing them how wealth is generated? Am I showing them alternative methods? Your parents showed that to you, just like my parents showed it to me, which I'm sure, even though you went and got a job in the beginning,
I tried it.
it highly impacted your outcome. A lot of what we learn, I mean, about diet and health, I mean, it just comes from our parents.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I just want to hit that point. I think it's super important for everybody listening. This isn't just about you.
No, it's not. And you know, it's funny because my parents left their home country with the $26 that they came here with just for a chance at being able to do what they did and what my sister and I have now done.
And so you can do what you're doing.
Exactly. Like, they laid a foundation for us so that my sister and I could like take it and scale it. And I hope that my kids take what we're doing for them and then go even further. Like, that's the hope, right? Is that the next generation does better and outperforms and is more successful and is more impactful and changes more things. The interesting thing about my household is, so my dad is a PhD in metallurgical engineering. So like, he did all the schooling on level 10, right? Yeah. And he worked at a W-2. And so I actually had both modeled for
me. Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. It's like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And luckily in my case, Rich Dad and Poor Dad were married to each other, which is great.
Yeah.
Because I got a chance to see both of them. And, you know, my dad worked really hard. And I actually ask my parents about this now. I talk to them about this often. And it's really interesting to like look back on it. And I think my dad would have liked to have started a business, but I think the risk was too high for his appetite at that, or for both of their appetite at that time, because they didn't have like a social safety net here, right? Like, they were the first ones to be here all alone.
And your dad's job probably gave your mom the safety net she needed.
That's
to go
exactly
do what she
right.
did. So it was a partnership.
It was. It really was a partnership. They've been married for 44 years this year. And it was like a very symbiotic relationship, because my dad traveled like 45 weeks out of the year. He was gone a lot. And my mom was basically, you know, raising these two little girls all by herself. And she is somebody who's like, I cannot just sit and not contribute to the household in a meaningful way outside of, you know, obviously raising their children. But she wanted to contribute financially to the household. And so she learned about like the tax efficiency of rep status. And, you know, we would live in like every house for 2 years and then move, and then they'd sell it so that they could sell it without the capital gains implications. Yeah. And she learned about all that before there was internet and before there were like masterminds, before these communities existed.
There was just books.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It was just books and like at the library. It wasn't even like websites or anything. And so she learned all of that like the good old fashioned way. But having my dad's job gave her the financial stability and the safety net that she needed to go out and do this thing, which then in turn made his job more fruitful because they were so tax efficient.
When I was a kid, very young, early elementary, my parents tried to buy a property and fix it and flip it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do good on it.
Yes.
And they never tried again. Never tried again. So, now my parents own multiple rental properties, but it was most of my life they didn't mess with that. So, you know, it can go either way.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. So then you jumped in, you started buying condos, you started buying single families. Tell me how you got started so somebody else can follow this path. So what I said earlier, success leaves clues. Mm-hmm. And what I think too many people make the mistake is they go, oh, look what Vina's doing. I'm going to do exactly what Vina does. But what they need to do is they need to do what Vina did.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, no, you can't do what I do.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just like watch whatever UFC and go, oh, I want to go jump in the ring like them. Right. No, you have to take the path.
Right.
So let's talk through this sort of path.
Yeah.
So,
okay. I started with single families. If I could go back, I wouldn't have started there.
And did you buy like something local? Because like people are like, I have to live by my property in case something happens.
Yes, I was living in DC at the time when I was acquiring.
Yeah.
And then I started buying in Dallas, which I live there now. So I did start buying locally. My first multifamily deal was in Dallas. But I think that was actually more coincidental than planned. Or I don't know, it's hard because maybe if someone had brought me a deal in like Michigan, I would have been like, no way, because I can't see it. And so I don't actually know if that would have changed it or not. So it may be happy accident that it was in Dallas. But what I would do differently, or if I was starting from total scratch, I would consume all of the free content. I absolutely could. I would find the people who have done the thing and then go find whatever consolidated information they have, whether it's like a course or a book or a class or a community. And I would join all of the ones that resonated with what I wanted to do and like were in alignment with me. And if I were joining a community, this is the biggest mistake I think people that join the Multify community make, is they watch the videos in 2 days and they go, okay, that's it. Mm. And yeah. Like, it took over 50 years of experience and over a month for us to record that. And it took you less than 24 hours to watch them.
Yeah.
You didn't get everything from that. I guarantee you that. So that's like one. But two is not leveraging the community. You should be talking to at least like 5 to 10 new people from the community itself. You should be meeting on a Zoom with them every week.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Every week.
So what you're saying is you actually have to do a little bit of work.
You do have to do work.
You know, when I was actively buying and selling and fixing and flipping properties, I would look at over 100 a week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Yes.
Here. And people would be like, oh, Mark, I want to do what you're doing. And they would say, Mark, I want to do what you're doing. Yeah. And they'd go look at 3 or 4 properties and say, I can't find a good one. Yeah. I'm like, 3 or 4?
You haven't even started.
Like, you got to dig through hundreds of properties, right? And then back to kind of the course thing, you know, there's 3 levels of learning, right? 1, learning the information. 2, doing the information. Mm-hmm. And then teaching it. So like, I use that stuff as like a workbook.
Yeah.
Right? So like, hey, let me go through module 1 and let me do module 1's work. Yes. And then I'll go get module 2 kind of a thing as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would suggest if someone wants to get started now, just go do the research. There's plenty of free information out there. What I like to say, because I'm mostly more in the like asset investing area, mm-hmm. and people ask me, what's the best asset I should buy? And I say, that's the wrong question.
Yeah.
The question is, how can I go get enough information where buying the asset is obvious to me. And so when people are saying, well, should I buy single family or should I buy multifamily? You go do the research until you don't know that answer to that question. I can't just tell you that.
This is the question I get. Should I start with single family or multifamily? And I go, yes. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, whichever one's going to get you started first, that's the one you should do. Because, you know, time in the market matters more than timing the market.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, the misconception with multifamily is that you and I can't access that. And that's just simply not true. And that's what I thought too. That's why I started in single family, because it was all that was modeled to me. My mom never knew or told me that I could invest in multifamily at the scale I invest in.
Right.
And I think if you would have told her 20 years ago that she could have bought a 400 unit complex, she would have been like, no.
Yeah.
Like, we don't make that much money here. Right. Yeah. And that's just, it's not the amount of money you make that actually matters. That's not the barrier to entry. It's the hard work that's the filter.
Yeah. All right. So now you've said where we should get started.
Yeah.
1, do the information, plenty of free information
so
out
much
there.
Free information.
Plenty of networking groups you can do. Yes. I mean, I just jump onto Twitter or Insta, and you can just find the people and just follow those people. Right.
Yeah,
and then you can see who they're following. You can follow those people. So there's plenty of free resources out there. Let's jump to the next highest level where you're at today. Yeah. Multifamily. I'm super interested in multifamily. Yeah. The largest building I owned, I had one partner on and we had 200 doors in Atlanta. Okay. didn't really work out too well for us. Oh, but no. That was the biggest I went. But most
when was that?
This was like 2006, I think.
Oh, okay. Say less. I know. Yeah, yeah. I know why this was painful.
But most everything I did was like multifamily. This was like kind of like mixed use, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I'm really interested in multifamily specifically because I'm at a point in my career where I don't want to own a bunch of condos.
Yeah, no.
Like kind of like where you're at. It's like, look, let me just go in on a multifamily deal. I need economy of scale, yeah. if you will.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So where does somebody get in on multifamily? Like, yeah.
Okay, lowest barrier to entry is if you want to be an LP in a deal, which is a limited partner. So that means you go and you find a Vina Jetty or a Brenda Jones and you write a check and then she invests it, manages your fund, right? Like that's the one first way you could do it. That's very passive. So that's someone like you, right, who has an expertise, has a business, has like a full career, but you want the exposure to multifamily. Mm-hmm. So that is the perfect like inroad or starter series.
So how does that typically broken down?
So the way that generally would work is you find the person you want to invest with, you know, you vet them and ask them the track record, all those questions. And then you say, okay, great. I want to write a $100,000 check or whatever that number is, right? Some funds, their minimums are 25K. There's some as low as like $1,000 wow, that you can really? Get into. Yeah, a Reg CF, a Reg crowd fund. Okay. You can get into like a lot of them are $1,000. Reg A's you can get into for like $1,000 or $10,000. Most private funds, which is what we do is like a private fund, will have anywhere from 25K, but really like 50K is usually the low end. And then you could write a check for millions of dollars if you want.
Sure.
So you go find those people and you invest passively. You'll learn a lot.
And what kind of terms would I typically be expecting?
So depending on the asset class, the location, the strategy, we do class B value add multifamily and we do large scale, like institutional quality assets. So for us, they're a little bit lower risk, so lower reward. We expect anywhere from like a 14 to 16% average annualized return over a 5-year hold.
Okay.
So on an equity multiple, you're looking at like anywhere from 1.4 on the very low end to like 1.6 to 1.8 is probably more accurate.
So then I'm part owner of that mm-hmm. asset as an LP.
Yeah.
And then I put the money in.
Yeah.
I own a certain percentage, whatever the yeah. terms are.
Right.
I'm guessing typically I'm going to get a preferred return
yes.
of
8, 9, 6%.
Okay, 6.
We're no longer, I wish we were still at 8%.
Okay.
We're no longer
6%
there.
6% preferred return, meaning that 6% is guaranteed to me before the rest of the partners get their money.
Yeah, you get the first 6% the right. of, yeah. yeah.
I get, I if not, there's not 6% guaranteed, to be I get the yeah. first. That's a better yeah. way to say it. And then we're hoping that we'll get up to 14% yes. over a 5-year period. Yeah. And then typically what happens is then over 5 years, then you're going to refinance the building.
Correct.
I get my money back. Yep. But I still own the building.
Yeah, or we sell it to the next buyer.
And I get cashed depends. Out.
Yeah, and you get
cashed out. Or I can get rolled into the next
deal.
Or you
deal. Get rolled over.
I get rolled in the next deal.
Yeah, so that's typically, we usually, historically we've held 3 years and 3 months, which was a very unusual time in the market, but-
It was a good bull run.
Yeah, generally in the bear market, we're looking at like 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm.
So every 5 years I get my money back mm-hmm. or rolled into the next deal.
Yeah.
Typically, that's kind of how it yes. works. And it gets bigger and bigger yeah. and bigger. What about the tax advantages?
Yeah, so you're gonna get a negative K-1 because you're an owner in the deal. So you are actually owning a part of the depreciation. And so we just had the bonus 100% bonus depreciation expire at the end of 22.
Well, it dropped to 80.
Yeah, it dropped to 80. So the 100% expired end of 22.
23, hopefully it's coming back. 80%. We're crossing our
yes.
fingers.
Right now we're holding back from sending investor K-1s right now because we think that there's a very good chance it'll come back at 100%.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how we can treat 2023 and if we can redo our tax allocation based on 100% or not.
Yeah.
If we can, then we'll, you know, reissue the K-1s as needed. But I do think it's going to come back, and which means that if you invested, let's say $100,000, now you're looking at a negative K-1 of, you know, let's call it 40K. So you're on paper, you're getting a loss of $40,000. And if you're a full-time real estate professional, you can offset active income with active losses. If you're not, then it's passive. It's a passive loss, but you can leverage it against other passive income you might have or the income from the investment, suspend the loss. And then when we exit and you get a massive capital gain, we can offset the capital gain yeah. with your suspended loss.
So find somebody who's doing these yes. deals. We can partner in them as an yes. LP. Could be anywhere from a few thousand up to millions. Yeah. Approximately 6% sort of preferred return, hopefully making up to 14-15% over a couple of years, and it gets rolled over every every 5 years. You said you should vet them and you ask them a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
What types of things should people be looking for when they're vetting?
Okay, so my favorites, if you can only ask one question to any sponsor, I always like to ask, what is the biggest mistake you made in multifamily and whatever asset class, right, in crypto? And I want to hear what their answer is. So you'll get like one of two things usually. You'll get, we've never made a mistake, or we don't have anything that's major like that, which tells me either you haven't been in business long enough or you're lying to me. And I don't know which one's worse, but I'm out.
Yeah.
What you really want to hear is, oh, let me pick one of the mistakes I've made, because there should have been many along the way.
Smooth seas never made a skilled sailor.
Exactly. And so I want to know what you perceive to be the biggest mistake. And I want to know what you did wrong. And then I want to know what is the thing you learned from that and what protections are in place now so that you don't do that again. Because the goal is not to have a sponsor that's perfect all the time, because it's just not realistic. It's not probable. And so that's like the one big question I always ask, like, what's the biggest mistake you've made? And then I want to hear what your answer is back to me. And then after that, you know, I'll ask questions like, do you have skin in the game? Like, what's your invest? Do you invest? And if you say no, I want a really good reason why. I want to know, like, I don't have any money left, or I just invested into this other thing, or whatever it is. I want to know why you're not investing, because if I'm going to trust you with my dollars, why should I if you don't trust your own dollars?
Of course.
So that's like another big question I ask. Another one I ask is, hey, when things go wrong, who can control the deal? Like, who can make decisions about this? And in the multifamily space, when you're an LP, another secret question I ask is, who can influence what is said in the PPM, the private placement memorandum, which is your legal document? Mm-hmm. I want to know who can influence. And I ask that question because it's a way to find out from like a non-defensive standpoint, who's actually running the deal, right? Because if you have a partner in the deal, it's like a 1% owner who's just like in the deal for some obscure reason, but not really influencing the deal. I don't really care about their background or resume, right? But like, I care about the people who can influence the PPM, because usually those are the sponsors that are actively involved in the deal.
What about track record? Like, how did your rent rolls work through the 2020 pandemic?
Yeah.
Or in 2008, what were your occupancies like, or vacancies like?
Well, hopefully, especially if they've been recently in this field, they're going to talk about something that we learned during the COVID period, right? Mm-hmm. Because that was probably the biggest uncertainty that most of us had, was that period from 2020 to 2022, right? Or even 2022 to 23, where interest rates shot up. Mm-hmm. A lot of sponsors got really hurt by it. And so hopefully the mistake question covers something adjacent to this.
Yeah.
But I do like to ask about track record. I'm less inclined to make a decision solely based on track record, in the sense of, if someone's new, right, and they're just starting out, I would rather know that they're hungry. I would rather know that they have everything invested in this. I would rather know that their family is relying on this success to be able to like eat tomorrow, than to invest with somebody who has like all of this experience and doesn't really care about the deal.
Yeah.
So like, if they have all this experience and then they're not investing in their own deal and all they do is raise capital, I'm like, are you really investing?
All these all these are individual levers, and then you have to sort of twirl them up at the bottom and see how they sum.
Correct.
What about vertically integrated companies that
I don't care as much about that, and it might be just biased because we're not vertically integrated, and we're purposefully not vertically integrated. One, I hate property management, so there's that. But two, and probably more importantly, is until you get to a certain scale in a very small market geographically, it doesn't really make sense to have property management. But one thing that I do is, like, I only do multifamily. I have one trick, and this is the only trick I do. And every single thing I do that's outside of this that I'm active in is some adjacent field. It's not necessarily a vertical, but it is adjacent to multifamily.
Yeah. Okay. What's your outlook now? So we're here in 2024.
Yeah.
We had, obviously, the Fed's been on this experiment of raising rates at the fastest rate in history.
Yep.
Potentially $2.92 trillion of commercial real estate mortgage bonds that are about to blow up and collapse the entire mid-tier banking system. This caused a lot of problems for a lot of the new sponsors that jumped onto the bandwagon at the tail end of this and got caught upside down. potentially a lot of weakness there. I guess one, what does that do for like the deal flow that you're looking at right now? And then sort of what's your outlook that you're kind of looking forward moving
yeah.
forward from?
So last year we transacted on one deal. It was a big deal. It was $131.5 million. So it was a large deal, 432 units, but it was the only deal I did last year because there wasn't deal flow. I just got out of a best and final round where the first round of offers that were submitted, it was a $60 million asset. So a little bit smaller than we usually transact today, but we're like, all right, we'll go after it. It's a good asset, good deal. We can make the numbers work. So we offered like somewhere around $60 million.
Is that on the market or from a bank?
It was on the market.
Okay.
And we were up against 60 other offers.
Wow.
60. What that tells me is there's a lot of money coming out to play, like off the sidelines, a lot
a
of dry
market.
Yeah, it's very much a seller's market. Well, actually, I take that back. It's not a seller's market, but it is, it's a buyer's market, but it's now starting to get competitive again where sellers can start making demands that they were making before. The thing that hinders it from being truly a seller's market is interest rates. So it's all the name.
You got 60 offers trying to get one asset.
You do, but that's because it's a very specific seller. It's the sellers who have good debt in place that's assumable.
Oh, gotcha.
That those are the sellers that are in a seller's market.
Sure.
But the market overall is still a buyer's
right,
market.
Right. Okay.
Like we're still seeing offers where it's like, oh, I want like a 30-day free look with no earnest money. And it's like, we haven't done that in the last decade. And now we're starting to see that. And that's very typical. But if you have a great assumable debt product, like the deal we bought for $131 million, we assumed debt at 2.77%
wow.
fixed for 12 years.
Wow.
So
take that all day.
I mean, all day. And that was an off-market deal, which is why we got it as great as we did.
Yeah.
But if it had been on market, we would have been up against maybe not 60 offers because at the size, there's very few people that can actually close on it. So maybe we would have been up against like 10 or 15 or 20 offers, which is still a lot for that size of asset.
Yeah.
But yeah, so deal flow, we're starting to see it ramp up a little bit more, but we're seeing the competition ramp up. My outlook for 2024 is very bullish on multifamily, specifically toward the last half of the year. I think we're going to see so much opportunity. Right now, the name of the game in multifamily is like survive till 2025. Like that is the goal because
yeah.
everybody is getting destroyed with below the line performance, which
yeah.
is the debt service.
Yeah.
And it has really hindered cash flow on a lot of assets, especially with bridge debt. And there's $47 billion of multifamily loans that are coming due this year.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of that is going to be sellers who can't either afford the rate cap extension or sellers who cannot afford to refi and re-leverage, or they'll have to bring money to the table to do that, and they didn't plan for that. And I think that's going to be an interesting opportunity for the people that are like getting ready now. Come 6 months from now, there's going to be so much opportunity to come in and pick up those on-sale assets.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And I think there could be a pivotal point. I mean, obviously everyone's pivotal, looking for the Fed to pivot, right? Or mm-hmm. start lowering rates. And if you're buying a cash flow property based off of a cap rate, if the debt service goes down because rates come down, it could push the valuation of those buildings
much
back
higher.
Up.
Yep.
So, you know, you buy right before the pivot happens and then potentially it could push the assets back up. Yep. Could be pretty good.
Yep. I think like, so generally speaking, cap rates and interest rates have like a 60 to 70% correlation. So as interest rates have spiked, cap rates have expanded. But to your point, I think we're actually starting to see compression again, which pleasantly surprised me, because I thought we were still going to be in like a steady cap rate environment, but we're actually seeing it compress again. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that there's a very good chance that by the end of the year, cap rates compress like another quarter of a point, maybe half a point. I don't know, but I don't think we'll see them as low
going down.
Yeah, going down.
Yeah. Yeah. What markets do you like?
Texas, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Arizona.
Sun Belt.
Yes, the Sun Belt.
Everybody wants to be where it's warm and sunny.
Yes, yes. And also the states that are maybe more landlord friendly.
Certainly don't buy in California.
Yeah, no, that is not on the top of my list, I have to say.
I own a house here.
Yeah.
And no other property. Don't buy in California.
On purpose.
They hate businesses and they hate people that make money. Don't
not buy very out. Investor friendly.
Yeah. Colorado's looking like it's trying to follow suit.
Yeah. Colorado is one of those states where it's like, it kind of depends, because the multifamily market's been great there.
I'm just talking about like tenant laws.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah. It's hard to own an asset where they want to cap how much you can charge and if you can't evict people when they don't pay.
Yeah. And I'm not interested in either of those things on our assets.
All right. So for people that want to get into multifamily, join a network.
Yes.
Find deal flow, partner with people,
or
co-invest with people.
Be in proximity with people that are doing the thing you want to do.
That right there, and that goes back all the way from the beginning, the relationship piece. I just hit on that for a second, right? So like close proximity.
Yeah.
So like if I mean, whatever the cliche, we're the sum of the five people we hang out with.
Yeah.
If you're hanging around with real estate investors, you're probably going to be investing in real estate.
Yeah.
The other day, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I went to this little mastermind event up in Newport Beach. I didn't pay for it. I got invited. A bunch of the other entrepreneurs, coaches, whatever, we kind of got in our own little huddle and sort of had like our own little mastermind at the event.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys there are just absolutely just crushing it.
I love that.
Just absolutely crushing it. And we're talking about, you know, how do we sell, webinars, challenges, you know, whatever. And man, I left there just like, I need to go to work. What am I doing? I got to go to work.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's the power of being in the close proximity. So anyway, keep going.
100%. Yeah. And that's exactly it. It wasn't until I met Pace Morby that I was like, wait, this is possible? Like, why did nobody tell me about these things? And it's because I was in the wrong rooms. And I look back at it now and I'm like, wow, I was oftentimes like the most successful person in that room. And I want to be the dumbest person in the room that I'm in. Otherwise, I'm in the wrong rooms. And now that I'm in these rooms, it's crazy. Like, we have a text thread with all of our friends that are like in this space and like just doing things at like the highest level. And you know, I remember like a couple years ago, there was a thread that went through our chat that was like, hey, does anyone have a plane they want to get rid of this year? Because I need to buy it in the next 2 weeks. And I like think back on it. And I'm like, if you had told like 18-year-old Vina that you would have ever been in a text thread with like 25 people that were legitimately serious about selling or buying a plane, like it was like nothing. Like it was like an apple. I wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, if I told most of America that like this is an actual conversation I'm having, they'd be like, haha, that's funny, or no way. But instead I'm like in this room, right, a virtual room, that people are like, yeah, I need to buy a plane in the next 2 weeks. And then people actually responded. They were like, oh, I have a plane I'm thinking about selling. Let me send you the specs on it. And I'm like, wow, this is so weird to just like witness it. But then you're like, this is possible. Like there are people who live this life and I could be one of them.
We talk about like the vehicle that you're in.
Yeah.
So our goal isn't wealth. For most of us, it's using wealth to get the time back. Yeah. Hopefully a lot of it is to make an impact on the world. People ask me how much is enough? And I'm like, enough what?
Yeah.
Enough experiences with my family?
Yeah.
Enough people I can help overseas? Enough churches I can donate down into Mexico? Like, how is that too much? Like, if you think there's enough, you're thinking too selfishly.
I agree.
But for the most part, it's sort of doing that. But when I think about these wealth vehicles that we have, they're all kind of about the same amount of work.
Yeah, they
are. So it's just like, which one do you want to build?
Pick one.
Right? Like, just pick one. I mean, it's all of these traditional work methods, whether you want to go in a cubicle for 40, 50 hours a week for 40 years, that's a lot of work too. Yeah. And like you could put that same amount of time in. So to be in a room with people that are buying and selling private jets, like they just operate at a different level. They're playing a different wealth game, drive a different wealth vehicle.
100%.
Okay, so get in those rooms, get around those types of people, and I guess just draft off of them.
Yeah, I mean, most people are willing to help you, especially once you've reached like a certain level of success. Like no one's going to ask you a question in person. You're like, no, I'm not going to tell you that. Like,
yeah,
of course, I at least am like, okay, sit down. Here are all the things that I learned. Here's
wait, let me buy you coffee first.
Well, yeah, they can't buy me coffee. No, you can't buy me coffee, but you can show up to the event I'm at.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll stay there, right? And so it's like, I will tell you all the things I know because at top we collaborate.
Yeah.
Right? Like at the top, we don't compete. We collaborate with each other. And I think that's a really important distinction. Like competition with each other is like the lowest vibration you can be in. But collaboration is like a high vibration. And when you're around people who think truly in abundance, like I thought I was abundant mindset. And then I started being around people who actually were in an abundant mindset. And I was like, oh, there's like levels to this game too, right? And so now I've like shifted my perspective and my thinking. But now that I'm like more in an abundant mindset, it's like abundance breeds more abundance. And then it just like gets bigger and bigger. And it's like the snowball effect that you can't stop it rolling down the hill anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So let's wrap this up. Now you not only do your deals, you help people do deals. Tell us about that real quick. Like how does that work?
Yeah. So in the Multify community, you know, we do our weekly coaching and, you know, I really love hanging out there. Like I hang out with my community more than anybody who has a full-time business to run should ever be hanging out. Right. But
it's because you built a tribe of people you want to be around.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. I get so much energy out of pouring into this community and they pour back into me. So it's like very symbiotic. And that is the place that is like my third baby, right? Like I have twin daughters and then this is like the third baby that I pour my time into. And this is where I probably sacrifice the most to build the Multify community because I love it so much. It's so rewarding, so fulfilling. And so basically it's like, you know, a community mentorship, whatever you want to call it. You know, the foundation is there, the education is there, whatever, but that's not the thing I think that makes it special. It's the people in there. It's the partnership. It's the collaboration. It's the easy button. It's still hard work once you get in there, but it's the easy button for what we do on a large scale.
Yeah. So they can join if they don't know where they can go join a community, you have one for them.
Yeah, you can go to multifynow.com/free and I have some like free downloads, ebooks that you can get started there. You can consume the information for free. And then you can go to the link on my Instagram bio and you can apply to join Multify and talk to my team.
So they could learn how to find deals, buy their own deals, raise money if they want to have partners or partner on other people's deals. I'm guessing all of that.
Absolutely. All those things exist there.
Yeah. Okay. So where's that again?
So it's multifynow.com/free.
Okay.
So.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Anything else that we missed? Any last pieces of advice that you can give to people that are like watching you and just go, oh, I want that abundance mindset and I want to have the time and freedom back.
It's a muscle. You have to exercise it for it to actually get strong. But the thing I would say to anybody who's watching this is it might seem overwhelming and it might seem scary. And it is because it's like taking a single sip out of a fire hose. Yeah. It's hard, but it's like that for all of us. We're just comfortable doing it because we do it afraid anyway. And so just show up, work on your mindset, and just you have to decide really like, is this the life you want to live or do you want something more for yourself? And if you feel like you were meant for more, then you have to show up scared because all of us do that. And we just keep going even when we fail. Like I quit every day, like all the time. I'm like, I quit. It's just I start again the next day. So you can quit. You just have to start again.
Yeah. To get something different, you got to do something different.
You got to do something different.
Great. So. All right, Vina, I think we'll wrap it up with that. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.